This is Tony Pope, live from L.A., city of fear.
The psycho vigilante killer continues his daily diet for murder. Bodies strung out, bodies with the skins ripped off, the hearts torn from the cadavers. And just recently, King Willie, the drug lord, the vicious drug lord, found in an alley just around the corner with his head cut off and his spinal column torn from the body, a fitting demise to the Prince of Powder.
Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast where we double back on the movies that impacted us growing up as 90s kids and decide whether they hold up today or best left in the past. I'm Tristan.
And I'm Greg. Hey, long time no see.
Yeah. Greg lost his voice last week, so
yeah,
we're recording two in one night again. This is the first of two. I mean, this obviously they're coming out week after week, but it's a long way of me saying prepare for drunk Tristan on the next week's episode.
Yeah, next week's episode. Time is an amazing thing, as we discussed with Christopher Nolan, or on his behalf.
Exactly.
A few weeks ago. Mm. So is this the last of our sequel September?
Sequel September, yes, it is the last one.
Wow.
And actually, everything I just said was a lie, because it's not even next week's episode, because next week we have a special episode.
Special episode.
With Petros from the Caged In / Coppola Connections pod. And he'll be joining us for a movie of his choosing, which, strangely enough, is not Coppola or Cage related. Yeah. Rookie of the Year.
Is that baseball one with the kid that breaks his arm?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, oh, there you go.
And Petros will be playing the character of Greg in this upcoming episode, because Greg's going to be in Singapore.
I am. I'm going to be eating food and sweating, which is what I do in Singapore.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. You should get like a little cloth to wipe your forehead as you eat, like a bad guy.
And do I say, Lordy, 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 it's hotter than the Dickens. Yeah. What does that mean?
Yeah. I don't know, but it's great. This is perfect. I feel like your character is now fully realized.
I thought you were going to suggest getting a hat with a fan in it. You went in a different direction.
You can get that too.
The face towel people are always the next to die in a movie. I'm picturing like Newman in...
Because Predator sees them as alphas. Is that why?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
One to take down.
So this week, Predator 2. Next week, Rookie of the Year.
Featuring Petros.
And the week after that, which is the second episode we're recording tonight, Time is a Flat Circle that we can manipulate, will be the first of our Halloween miniseries.
Woo!
Second annual spooktacular.
Ooh,
we'll be doing the Blair Witch Project. So there you have it.
Blair Witch Project.
And then we'll do some horror movies.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. It's not that scary.
Man. Yeah, well, I guess we'll talk about it in 3 weeks. But, yeah, damn. But today we are talking about Predator 2. I know a few of you guys out there are pretty excited about this.
As are we.
Yeah, there was a bit of love for old Predator. Predator.
Yeah.
Did there?
I see you did there. Yeah, that's good.
Wow.
From 1990, no less.
Yeah.
The first inaugural year of the 90s, some might say.
Yeah, they might.
So 1990, a little stat for you music aficionados out there.
The tambourine was invented.
No, it was the first rap single to ever reach number one in the US. And we know what that was, Tristan.
What was it?
It was Ice Ice Baby.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Performed by Robert Van Winkle, a.k.a. Vanilla Ice.
Ice, Ice Baby. Ice, Ice Baby.
All right, stop, collaborate and listen. Ice is back with my brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly. Flow like a harpoon daily and nightly.
Will it ever stop?
Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights and I'll glow. Extreme, I rock a mic like a vandal, light up a stage and wax a chump like a candle.
I saw an interview with him recently on TikTok.
Oh yeah?
And he seems like a lovely fellow. He talked about how he involuntarily ended up funding Death Row Records and basically has this dotted line legacy of all this great music that was made off the money that Suge took from him.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, he talks about it pretty light. Like he's like, well, at least that's something great that came out of it. Like all this great music, yada yada yada. Like he's not being a jerk about it, and he acknowledges, you know, his limited impact from a musical sense.
Did he finish it with "So you're welcome"?
He should have. Word to your mother.
Well, I must admit, whilst you describe his humility, that's newfound humility, Tristan.
Yeah.
Now
that'll happen to you.
Let's just talk about some of the things he borrowed for this song. Probably most well known, the opening riff is pretty clearly "Under Pressure." Now, he at the time argued that, oh, no, but mine has mine's in a G key, G, chord of G, what do you call it again?
In the key.
Key, thank you.
Key of G.
I knew there was a K word in music that was escaping me. But he did. There was no accreditation at the time, not even acknowledgement.
That's crazy. A music genre partially defined by the power of sampling, first number one ever of that genre. And he denies an extremely obvious sample. Like, just embrace. I mean, I know why he denied it, I guess, because he didn't pay them. But fuck, it's so weird.
Well,
it's so obvious. Like, it's.
He also. I know. It's the beginning of both the songs. It's not even. It's not like those beautiful.
To the point where you don't know which one it's going to be.
Yeah.
And that comes on. And then you don't know which one it's going to be.
And then he says, "Yo, VIP," and you change the station.
Yeah.
But he also claimed, like, while he's claiming, like, "You're welcome" for Death Row. He also says, "Well, I also was the first one to go public using a sample, which all rappers do now. So you're welcome."
Wait, he can't have it both ways, Van Winkle.
He's changed
his
tune.
So he says that now.
Yeah.
Retrospectively. Well, that's just not true either. But publicly.
Well, in mainstream, perhaps.
Yeah.
And apparently, Ice Ice Baby is like the signature chant for the. Alpha Phi Alpha, which is the national African American like fraternity, the main one.
Ah.
Well, my best known one. I don't know.
Interesting.
So that, yeah, he took that too. Took it all. And then Suge took it all back.
Yeah. Just shook the coins out of his pockets.
Reparations.
Yeah. He fully did that, right? He grabbed him by the ankles and hung him over a balcony.
I believe
something.
So. That's as the legend goes. And I think.
I may be embellishing the ankles.
Pretty sure, yeah. I heard that from a Vanilla Ice interview as well. He's like, yeah, no, that's true. He hung me over a balcony by my legs. That's fucked up.
Sugar Honey Ice.
Scary man. So, yeah, that was a big song.
You know, Snoop has bought Death Row Records now.
Oh.
And he's just signed Mace.
Ah, he's finally going to scratch his name on that blimp.
Yeah, yeah. Same old pimp, Mace, you know ain't nothing changed but my limp.
Can't stop till I see my name on the blimp. Guarantee me yourself, pull it up. Why you scratch your name on a blimp? Bet you didn't know anyone, bet you know me now. I don't know you now, Mace. I don't know you. What happened to Mace?
Well, I think he became a pastor.
Oh, good for him.
Like a rigatoni or something.
Mm.
But he I guess he's back because, yeah, he's signed. Everything that's old is new again.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's very interesting. I didn't know that. I'm going to go and find some Mace after this.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, what a year.
Yeah, big year for commercial rap.
Maybe bad year for – it's funny because then the first rap Grammy went to Will Smith.
Mm.
They really had to
for getting jiggy really with it.
Dip their toe in. They really, yeah. No, for Boom Shake the Room.
Oh.
Or what? Or that album? I may not have been.
That was a pretty cool. Okay. That was a pretty must cool have been song, that song at the time. I thought he was.
That was
street
a fucking
at the
great
time.
Song. I was obsessed.
Man, he was cool. Anyway.
All right, let's get into it. Hey, good year. Good, well, bad year for music, I suppose, but interesting year for music in other ways. Mm. Hey, big year for movies also.
Yeah.
It's a year of sequels in many ways. Back to the Future 3 came out in 1990.
Booty.
Three Men and a Little Lady.
Meh.
RoboCop 2, Gremlins 2.
Oh.
Rocky 5. Two. Child's Play 2.
We could have just done this year for Sequel September.
We absolutely could have. Damn. God damn. But it wasn't just sequel. Oh, Die Hard 2.
What?
Maybe it was just sequels. Yeah. That's crazy.
That is pretty crazy, man. We literally could have done a whole thing on 1990 sequels.
Yeah, Pretty Woman 2, Prettier Woman. That's not true.
You made that
just
one
Pretty
up,
Woman.
Yeah,
I made that one up. It was the year of Ghost, the film that made Greg cry. It was the year of Home Alone. Many things. These are Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Many things. Oh. Kindergarten Cub.
No wonder the music was lacking. They were too busy making movies.
Exactly. But there was a film, Greg.
Yeah, go on.
Came out in 1990. Coming in all the way at number 22 for the year, globally speaking, of course.
Repeater.
A film about a hunter, a predator, as it were. Mm. And then the second one, titled Predator 2. Predator 2 came out in November of 1990. Budget of $30 million. Gross box office of $57.1 million. So not huge. A box office disappointment, many would say. And a critical disappointment, many critics would say. Mm. Rotten Tomatoes critic score is 31%. Audience score of 44%. Mm. Both very low.
Interesting.
Which I guess is what I kind of expected. I mean, we'll get into it a bit more, but I think as we've been doing these films, I've really been starting to think that this might be a movie I really like.
Ah.
Anyway, well, actually, speaking of, what's your history with this film? Was this a big one for you?
Yeah, so this movie I had seen, but I couldn't really remember. I could only remember the bodies hanging up in the fancy drug dealer's penthouse.
Oh yeah.
And I thought that was the opening scene of the movie. That was my little sort of Mandela.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't remember much else of it other than it had Danny Glover and it was quite dark and gritty. That was it. It used to be on TV late at night quite a bit. I think it used to get the sort of 10:30 slot on 7, 9 or 10.
When was the last time you reckon you watched it?
Oh man, I was trying to work that out and like it's probably in the 90s I would say.
Interesting.
What about you?
I think I watched this maybe within the last 10 years. Well, okay. I guess rewind further. I saw it at Jono's house, of course, back in the day, but I must have only seen bits. Like that might have been one of the ones where I just walked in and he's already watching it. I just remember the watch, I guess now I've learned is Gary Busey's death with the old frisbee.
Oh, yeah.
Frisbee slice. Yeah.
Neither did Gary.
Yeah. And then I think I just always thought it was the shit one, so never really watched it the way I would watch Predator 1. And then I think I watched it, yes, at some point in the last 10 years and still didn't think much of it, to be honest with you. But
okay.
But that was pre-pod and pre a lot of things, and I think my palate has changed a lot. Maybe because of the podcast. And I think even doing Predator 1 on the podcast made me think a little differently about the franchise and things and yeah, I mean, we'll get into all that stuff. But it was very due for a rewatch because I was thinking like, I think I might like it now. Like, I don't know. I think about what it is on paper and that all sounds good to me. So I was very keen for this rewatch.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, maybe with Prey coming out, it's made me reflect a bit more too about what –
I think that's part of it.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm sure we'll touch on that too. But, yeah, is Predator 2 actually awesome? We'll find out after these messages.
The fresh-baked bread piled with extra lean, juicy ham. Oven-roasted turkey breast topped with a classic taste of –
pardon me. Would you have any Grey Poupon? But of course.
Introducing Subway's new Turkey and Ham Dijon. Turkey, ham, and the great taste of Grey Poupon mustard. Now for a limited time on your choice of rolls. At Subway, the place where fresh is the taste.
Welcome back. Should I get into the origin story?
Please.
Origin story.
So it is a sequel, so I'll do a brief recap of the OG story from the OG film. And that was a tale of Jim and John Thomas, first-time writers. They had an idea for a script they originally called Hunter. And it was sparked off a joke at the time, because Rocky IV had just come out. And the banter around the water cooler at the time was like, what's next? What's Rocky going to fight next? An alien? And they thought, aha, interesting.
Wow.
And they thought, okay, that's interesting. And then they had, I mean, you can go back and listen to the episode for the full story, but that was the genesis of it. And then they thought about, you know, the idea of hunting, and if there was a hunter from another planet, what would they be hunting? What's the most dangerous creature on Earth? It's humans. And what's the most dangerous kind of human? Combat soldiers / Arnold Schwarzenegger. And bish, bash, bosh, you got Predator 1. Produced by Joel Silver, directed by John McTiernan, the master of postmodern action with Predator, Die Hard, The Last Action Hero, all of the above, you know, he's all over this shit. $100 million later, they thought maybe they should make a sequel.
That's how it works.
So the studio approaches Jim and John one more time and says, let's do it again. And apparently they came back with 6 different ideas.
Ooh.
I couldn't find them all. I only came back.
Got a couple?
Yeah, I got a couple. Well, one was the urban jungle, which is what we ended up with. There was also the idea of setting it in World War II, which is pretty cool.
Okay.
I think they should still do that.
I'm down for that.
They
still could do that.
One of them said, we also had the idea about doing World War II version in the Battle of Bulge. It's probably pronounced differently, in the middle of winter.
Battle of the Bulge.
A German foot platoon and American platoon separated and had a stalemate fighting each other off when a predator shows up. They have to join together to defeat it, and we thought the snow predator effect would be quite different. I think the reason they didn't end up doing that is because they didn't really want to. The idea of the Nazis having to team up with the Americans, I think, was kind of no bueno.
That's a negative.
Yeah, we can't really make the Nazis good guys. It's pretty hard.
I mean, at no point is that an option.
Yeah, it's tough. I think there's probably a way to do it. Like if you take the lens that, you know, the soldiers are just people, but I don't know. Nazis is pretty out there, man.
Maybe a different war. Something best left alone.
Yeah, maybe a different war. Yeah, maybe a different war. Yeah, like Vietnam or something. I don't know. And I don't know if all these ideas are mutually exclusive, but these are the fragments I managed to pick up. So some of these may stack together or maybe not. But another component was potentially Arnie coming back with some salvaged Predator tech from the first movie as being, you know, an ingredient. But that's all I could kind of find, other than it was supposed to be set in New York. But yeah, ultimately the urban jungle idea kind of won. Add to that heat wave, gang wars, you got yourself a picture.
A lot going on.
Yeah, the script was written in 6 weeks with the goal to expand Predator's goals and motives, which is, not a bad goal. Expand the lore a little bit.
Yeah.
Which I quite like.
Build out that universe.
Yeah. And, it was written with Arnold in mind too, but they couldn't get him.
Yeah.
Because he was busy making Terminator 2, which in retrospect I would say is a beautiful constraint, because for reasons that we'll get into, I think it's great that he's not in it, because it gives it an opportunity to be something else.
Yeah. It's not about him.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's called Predator, not Dutch.
You son of a bitch.
No? Notably set in 1997 but made in 1990. We love when it's just slightly in the future, like Demolition Man, like the opening of Demolition Man.
Oh, yeah, the slight future.
And yeah, Joel Silver brings in a director by the name of Stephen Hopkins, who directed Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child.
Oh yeah.
Who turns out to be an Australian.
Oh.
I was watching the making of, and this Australian guy kept talking. And at first I thought it was like a stunt guy or something because he was quite tall, so maybe he was doing Predator stunts or something. But no, he's the director. Aussie guy.
There you go. You're welcome, world.
Yeah. He did like that 90s version of Lost in Space as well and Blown Away.
Oh.
And on TV he worked on 24 and Californication. So he's doing things.
Yes, that's right.
Side note, everyone should watch The Making of Predator 2 because Gary Busey in it is amazing. but more on that really? Later. Ultimately, what you got there is you got yourself a picture, Bish Bash Bosh, rap party at the Viper Room, because we're in LA after all.
Indeed.
Let's play the trailer.
Los Angeles, 1997. It's the hottest summer on record. Pollution is choking the city. The gangs control the streets.
It has not been a nice day!
As bad as things are, they're about to get worse. Much worse.
Whoever killed him's gonna pay. I'm gonna finish it.
It has almost no weight.
But it cuts like steel.
Incredible.
Whoever did this took out four men armed with machine guns by hand.
You don't know what you're dealing with. Otherworld life forms drawn by heat and conflict.
Yeah.
He's on safari. Lions. Tigers. The bears. Oh my.
Glover, Gary Busey, Ruben Blades, Maria Conchita Alonso, Bill Paxton. Predator 2. He's in town with a few days to kill this Thanksgiving.
Fuck, that's fucking great.
He's in town with a few days to kill.
Man, that is, oh, what a trailer. That seems like a fake trailer that should play in the Grindhouse double feature, Tarantino and Rodriguez. Like, that's fucking great. Even just that trailer itself is
art. That was a great trailer.
Fuck.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
I'm pumped.
I can't even, like, I feel bad with my synopsis because that trailer was perfect. Oh, it was everything. It was everything I want to be in.
With that caveat, would you mind taking us through the plot, Greg?
Yeah, at a very high level I will.
Yeah.
So as you heard, LA is burning, figuratively and literally. The sweltering heat, the steams.
It's a sweaty movie.
This sweaty, sweaty, schwitzy movie. Lordy, it's hotter than the Dickens. And there's another kind of fire out there, Tristan. Gunfire.
Oh.
Ratatata. Many bullets. There's lots of shooty bang bangs. The bullets are railing across this sweltering, sweaty urban jungle. And there's a three-way shootout. You've got the Rustas, the Colombians, and the cops. All being observed by a familiar foe high above the treetops, I mean buildings. And so our Preddy starts taking out the baddies. The cops can't figure out what's happening, but they know something's up. Murtaugh's getting close, but pesky Gary Busey keeps cop blocking him. And Preddy has a bit of a crush on Murtaugh, it seems. Keeps the voyeurism at its best. So they sort of duke it out, and it goes longer than you'd expect.
It does kind of. There's a bit in the middle where I thought it was like losing me, but it's only like 10 minutes or 5 to 10 minutes and then it's back.
Yeah, but then it gets you back.
Yeah, fully gets you back. I was like, I literally wrote in my notes like, oh, okay, this is why it's shit. It dies at this point. But no, it comes back, man.
Yeah, it does come back.
Greg, I love this movie. I fucking loved it.
Good. We've done a good job of not talking about this because I did really – more often than not, we tend to like the same things.
Yeah.
I'm with you, man. This was –
I mean, it's far from perfect,
but it's so much better. Oh, you think it's perfect?
You said it's far from perfect. Well,
I don't think it's perfect.
I think it is perfect. I've got some more reasons that I'll elaborate on. I think its imperfections just work for what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I'll elaborate on that a little bit later. But
I wasn't expecting it to be good.
Yeah, exactly. This is like the turnaround story of the century, for Double Impact at least. Like, this is the first time I think we've done something like this where something we both kind of – well, even just culturally, everyone says this is the shit one. I know there is a bit of a swing back and it's a bit of a cult thing
now.
Yeah,
there's a bit of love for it out there, I discovered.
Yeah.
And we obviously saw with our chat page people.
Yeah.
It's a bit of love from the group.
But, you know, on the record – The official story out there is this is not a good movie, but man, it's fucking great.
It's great.
It's fucking the mood. Great.
It's the mood.
It's perfect.
It's sweltering.
It's so perfect.
It's got the music.
And like I said, I don't think we've ever done a movie that has turned out to be awesome when we thought it might be shit. Like
a lot of people, Well, there's probably a bunch of people going, yeah, dude, everyone knows this is good. Well, we didn't.
Yeah, well, and I mean the Rotten Tomatoes scores and shit, right? Like, not that we always agree with that, but it's not just us that thought it was shit previously.
People did. So I get the critics not loving it, but also not.
No, I
actually,
don't now.
Also
I
don't
think,
get that, actually. Yeah, you know, I'm with you. It's.
I mean, basically all my notes for this episode are reasons why I think it's great.
And another thing.
I'm no Roger Ebert's. But I think I've got some pretty strong rationale from a critical point of view as to why this movie is fucking awesome. Fucking awesome. Because actually going into this, I think we've talked about this before. I always thought Predators was the one that is maybe the truest sequel until this week, of course. Well, until I saw Prey as well. Not that I thought that movie was great, but at least conceptually I thought, okay, well, if you're going to do a sequel to a movie like that, like we said in Back to the Future 2, sometimes a good sequel is to invert the premise of the first one. So Back to the Future 1 goes to the past. Back to the Future 2 goes to the future. Terminator 1, Arnie's bad. Terminator 2, Arnie's good. Predator 1, one Predator comes to Earth. Predators, bunch of humans go to Predator Planet. That makes sense conceptually to me. But I take that all back now because this is the perfect sequel and it was right under my nose the whole time. It's perfect.
Yeah. They did, you know, put him in a new environment.
Yeah.
Build on the story of the Predator, like what they're about. It's
exactly.
All there for you.
Yeah. It's in terms of like I do think it's been handy doing a few sequels in a row because to that point, Greg, you just start to understand a little bit better what makes a good sequel. And that's a huge one, like expanding the lore a little bit without going too crazy. Yeah. Like maybe not Matrix Revolutions or some shit, but, you know, giving us a bit more.
Just giving you a huh.
Yeah.
And it comes quite late.
Yeah.
Like you're sort of piecing it together and then it gives it to you. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. I also think sequels in the city are pretty good. From rural to city. Babe 2, Pig in the City. I know it's not a movie, but Resident Evil 2, you know, the first one's in a mansion in the forest or whatever, and the second one's in the city, and it's like, oh, we get to go to the city now. And I thought Crocodile Dundee 2, but no, he goes to the city in the first one, as we found out. But yeah, I always thought the second one was the city, but yeah. It's like a logical, in like a tropey way, but a fun tropey way that the sequel is like, oh, let's send him to the big city. Like that works for me. I love that.
Yeah.
The urban jungle. Yeah. You know, that's beautiful. Beautiful. And just, it's so sweaty and so gritty and so over the top. It's almost like a Verhoevian picture, you know?
Yeah. It's got that dystopian satire.
Yeah.
Thread through it.
It's so over the top. Like, yeah.
Man, I actually thought they could have gone harder on that because they sprinkle it in and it's great.
Yeah.
But they could have, like, there's probably a version of this film that's more like District 9 than RoboCop, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And because there's a few scenes, maybe this is what you're thinking of too, is like when they it almost shows what happens when everyone has guns.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because I've seen people make the argument, I mean, obviously I have because I'm a human and I exist in 2022, but you know how like after a shooting someone says like, well, this wouldn't have happened if the good guys had guns. But if everyone has guns.
More guns, exactly.
Then it's just the wild, wild west, man. Like, and like that the train scene on this and everyone pulls out guns, like it's just insanity. Yeah. And yeah, it almost feels like, yeah, like satire in a Verhoevian kind of way. Yeah, that's very astute on your part.
It's very astute on your part.
You could have just pushed this a little bit further into that space.
Yeah, I reckon they could have. I love that shit.
Yeah, yeah. There's also something, this isn't really there in the text, but I'm definitely bringing this to it. It's interesting watching the first half of this movie because obviously we know it's Predator, but they don't really know what it is. And they're like cops and detectives and shit. And ultimately something is killing these bad guys. So it's almost like Batman. Batman doesn't really kill, but, you know, Spawn. Is there like some vigilante out there like cleaning up this town?
Yeah. That's
it could have been fun if they explored that a little bit. Because even perches on top of buildings and gargoyles like Batman and Spawn.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. It's an astute on your behalf, Tristan.
Thanks, man.
It's very astute on your part.
Very nice of you. Very generous.
Thanks, Frank.
But this is a fucking great movie. The cast, I forgot Paxton was in it. I forgot Boosie was in it.
Yeah.
Like I said, Boosie is the MVP of the making of. You got to watch it. You know, I got in a car accident. I nearly died. I went to the other side. I saw things. You know, this guy. Now, he talks about like all kinds. He talks about it as if there's elements of this that are true. Yeah, it's like, yeah. I understand this. This is... It's so weird.
December 4th, 1988, at 1:15 in the afternoon, I hit the concrete going 45 knots. And I had some out-of-body experiences, and I went to the other side. So there's a real curious element in what is out of this world, and we're just merely a speck in the whole thing.
We're going in after another world life force from another galaxy that has a self-defense mechanism that we don't understand. It's intangible to this time and space. It's actually from the theory of relativity and from the theory of quantum mechanics. Take those properties and equalize them, and you have the quantum theory of gravity, which is the discussion of how this universe started and how it will end. The Predator knows that information already. It is our job and our objective to go capture the Predator, sit him down, have a talk with him, find out why he does what he does, how he does what he does, and where he gets the weaponry and the defense mechanisms he uses in order to obtain his goal. And that is our goal. If we don't achieve that goal, we will be turned into vapor clouds made of small pink particles known on Earth as blood.
It's amazing. And actually, in the making of, he elaborates. I don't know if this was in the movie. I can't remember. But he talks about in the making of that in the story, in the narrative within the film, Arnold's character died 9 months after the events of the first film. Don't know why.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
I guess apparently the events of the first film are what his character is based on, like learning from that and that kind of shit, I guess. Yeah. Well, I've got a kind of a laundry list of things I love about this movie. Or no, I've kind of gone through the more bits and pieces-y stuff, but I've got some bigger themes. Would you indulge me?
Indulge.
Okay, so Prey came out a few weeks ago. We both watched it. We both loved it. Good movie. Great movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of what I've heard critics say about that movie I think equally applies to this. Like a lot of people saying the director / writer, Dan Trachtenberg, is that his name? I think it is. He's cracked the code on what a Predator sequel should be.
What code?
You know, you just take Predator and you throw him into different time periods and settings. And
oh, yes.
I would say different genres. But I would say that's what this movie does. And like we said last time, that's what the first movie does. I think that was one of the first nuggets that made me reflect on this movie differently was when we did Predator 1, watching that with fresh eyes a couple of years ago when we did it.
Yeah.
It really stood out to me. I never really noticed before to what extent it basically was a, not generic, but I guess classic tropey Lat Pack movie for the first half, almost the entire first half. There's a whole war going on. And then Predator shows up like halfway through. So it's like that's Predator entering a Lat Pack movie.
Uh-huh.
You know? Prey is Predator entering a period movie, you know?
Yeah.
And Predator 2 is Predator entering a fucking a gritty cop detective movie.
Uh-huh.
Like in the same way that Predator 1 has all the tropes of a Lat Pack movie, i.e. lats and sweat and
guns.
And all of them, like fucking everything, huge guns that are meant for helicopters held by Jesse Ventura, all these things. this movie has all those things. It has the, you know, the angry chief or whatever. It has the FBI guy who's the same FBI guy from Die Hard.
Yeah.
It has Bill Paxton's character who basically, I imagine he thinks he is Axel Foley in this movie. You know, the one that transfers over and is like a wise ass. Like he thinks he's the main character of this movie. But it's got all like the classic tropes of a detective movie, a cop movie, like
yeah,
a Verhoeven movie, like we'll say. Like it kind of has all of that. So it is still meeting that criteria that people are saying is so great about Prey. And I think it's great that Arnie's not in it because then it allows them to go all the way with this because you have Danny instead of Arnie, which again, I think previously I always thought was a bit weird. But it works perfectly. There's no lats to be found in this film at all. There's no lats.
Danny's in pretty good shape.
I mean, he's in good shape, don't get me wrong. But
they could have given him a singlet scene at least, I felt.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like they robbed him of his guns moment. Anyway,
that's true. But it keeps it pure because it adheres more to the standard of a cop slash detective drama. So
yeah,
it kind of works. Predators just entered another genre. I dig that. I think it's fucking great.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess maybe that's most of my points.
Hey, give yourself an astute, Tristan.
Yeah.
It's very astute.
But, man, I think that is the big one for me. Because if I think about now the Predator franchise and if that is the criteria for the Predator franchise, it's like this kind of postmodern sci-fi action film that series, which is about a predator, if you will, entering different Hollywood genre films. That's fucking great.
Because
then you could go
to a rom-com.
Exactly. Well, I thought about that, but he won't kill anyone because no one's got a gun. I did make a list of what he could enter, though.
I did think about that.
So I thought we kind of touched on this already. I think the key thing is because I think a lot of people, like I was saying, the critics are like, oh, he's cracked the formula. Now we just need to throw Predator into different situations. And I would caution that saying I think yes, as long as it brings like a new dynamic because you don't want to just see the same events unfold with a different backdrop. And again, I think the three we've been talking about do that. But
yeah.
I think like a 60s vibe, Vietnam War could be good.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Yeah, something in the future, like more traditional sci-fi, you know, people with laser guns and shit and maybe flying cars. Japanese samurai shit.
Yeah.
Inspired by an upcoming film we're doing, found footage genre. That could be good.
Yeah.
And then, I was trying to think of like more of a fun one, like rom-com, but yeah, based on his goddamn principles, he won't murder anyone in a rom-com. So, but I was thinking based on that, using that constraint, Greg, what if there was a film where the predator inadvertently becomes the hero of the movie? So if it's like a horror movie or a thriller and the predator ends up going for the bad guy, obviously, because the victims are all tied up and, you know, hostages or whatever.
Yeah.
He ends up saving them. Not that that's his intent, but there you go. The accidental hero predator. That could be fun.
Yeah.
There you go. There's five movies for them to make right now. Oh, and another one was like a spy genre, maybe like a Jason Bourne slash Bond. That one feels like a stretch though. But the others, I think you could make all of them tomorrow. Green light. Let's fast track this one.
Let's do it. Let's put Marvel Ant-Man 7 on hold.
I mean, he could enter the Marvel Universe. I think there was a in the comics, it's crossed over with Batman.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Hey, one little criticism or observation, and I haven't, this isn't fully formed.
Oh, yeah.
But there was some weird racial thing going on, like, because he's got his, Predator has dreads.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was a bunch of Rastas in this doing voodoo stuff, but then it wasn't really connected, really.
Yeah. Well, but that's what I kind of like, though, because all the stuff in the beginning of the movie is kind of unrelated. Like the fact that there's a gang war going on and there's no linkage, I kind of like. But do you mean more like the racial thing, the fact that it's like seeing dreadlocks and that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's something there. I don't know exactly what.
I was thinking as well, like, shit, the gangs are all race-based. This is pretty bad. Yeah. But they even it out because all of the good guys were different races too. Obviously, Danny Glover.
Danny Glover is amazing in this, by the
way. He's so good. So good. I mean, they're all good. I touched on the cast, but we didn't really give him enough airtime, did we? Danny Glover is awesome.
He apparently he said out of all his movies, this and I forget the other one were the two that he felt like, I forget the word I read, but it was like the most powerful in. Like he was at his physical and like mental peak in making these movies. So he was like, I felt like the toughest guy in the world making Predator 2. He just said, I was so fit and I was just mentally just plugged in. He felt like this was one of his best moments in his life, which is pretty cool.
That is the aura.
That's why I was like, get the rig out.
Yeah, true. You know? It is out at some point.
Is there? Oh, okay.
Maybe he just changes his shirt or something. But I noticed. He also has a great hairline. It's like a zigzag, like Balrog from Street Fighter.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. Very cool.
What did you take of Paxton's performance?
He was like almost bad in the beginning. Like it was almost like so over the top. But again, if you look at it through the lens of like, well, I'm watching the tropes of a gritty cop drama or cop thing. It makes you get on board. Like it's almost cartoonish, his character, put it that way.
Yeah, it was.
But then with him and Boosie and, you know, all the rest, how there's these kind of characters that feel like they're going to be not the antagonist but like an issue, they end up all being good eggs. Like even Paxton's character, he's a good cop, you know.
Yeah.
Even though he's kind of a douche, at the end of the day, he's good people. And Boosie too, he was only really trying to protect Danny from a predator.
Mm.
So I kind of liked that too. There was something nice about that.
Yeah.
When that all came together. What did you think of Paxton? Too much?
Yeah, I think it feels like he calmed down in the role a bit more as the film went on.
Yeah.
So I think for me it was less about me getting more used to him. I feel like he actually did calm down a bit. So it was
That's interesting.
It was kind of hard to follow a little bit.
That's true. That's a good point. Maybe he did turn it down. Or I guess maybe once they realized there was an alien predator chasing them.
He had to focus a bit. Maybe that's it.
We also had Maria Conchita Alonso, who we remember from The Running Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's badass. I
mean, they did pretty well on the old multicultural front with the cops. Again, it would have been really bad if all the cops were white and all these gangs, you know, like that would have been fucked up.
The worst. Who else have we got in there? Then there's some smaller performances.
Yeah.
I did take notice of that reporter, the sort of the people need to know. And I think that was kind of touching into that dystopian satire sort of thing that I liked. But they I looked up that guy. His name's Morton Downey Jr. And I was like, is that Robert Downey Jr.'s dad? It's not.
That would be Robert Downey, wouldn't it?
Touche, sir. Touche. So maybe it's his brother. brother. His uncle, his cousin.
Maybe.
Yeah, Morton cousin. And Robert are brothers.
Yeah. That works.
There we go.
That's astute.
We got there.
It's very astute on your part.
So this chap, Morton Downey Jr., that has a bit of presence on the screen in this film, in a small way. He was a pioneer in junk TV. Now, junk TV, I think, as I understand, is like Donahue, Springer.
Yeah, okay. So he's kind of playing a version of himself a little bit. Kinda.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
So he was a real pioneer in that space. I think maybe even the first.
Fuck, also like Running Man, right? Because the host of Running Man was also like, there's some connecties there.
Yeah. Because he, of course. So I do have a clip. I don't know if we want to listen to it, but it's just basically one of the. I think you can sort of just jump in anywhere just to get a vibe of the show.
Oh, this is his show. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
This is his show. So he only lasted a couple of years.
You know, there's a problem in this country. Shut up a minute. Let me tell you something. All right. There's a problem in this country that really terrifies me. We keep spending more and more money publicly and privately, yet the crime rate keeps going up, especially in our inner cities. What's going on with the leadership in this country? In my opinion, nothing, all right? Because many of them aren't even really leaders, and some of us don't let the leaders be leaders. Next on the Morton Downey Jr. Show.
Jerry, Morton. Al Sharpton on there.
So why is Al Sharpton on there? That whole genre is fascinating, the evolution of that genre. Because that would be interesting to do
de-evolution?
Yeah, basically, because they started quite serious, like almost just like a panel type show. Let's speak to some experts about some stuff.
Yeah, some extremists.
Yeah, you had Oprah, Sally Jesse, Ricky Lake, Jerry Springer, Maury Povich, blah, 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 blah. Vomit.
Yeah.
Trash. Pure garbage. Actually, that just reminded me, because that was from 1988, that clip. Big year, actually, that year. But that clip was from 1988. And I was thinking, you know, when it's a film that it was made in 1 year and set just several years later, there must be, I was like, why? What was happening in 1990 that made them think that's what 1997 would be like? And I guess one point on their side might be, maybe they thought global warming would happen a lot faster. You know, not bad. Astute on their part.
Not bad.
That's something.
It's warm.
But I know you looked into this previously when we did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which came out the same year, and noting that this was originally conceived as a New York setting. Homicides in New York were peaking in 1990.
That's right.
For every 100,000 people in New York, 30 got murdered. That was the...
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so five times higher than today. I was reading this article about it that was reflecting on it, and it was saying one of the precincts had this written down on their note board or whatever it was where they recorded these things. It said, you give us 22 minutes, we'll give you a homicide.
Yeah.
And there were all these quotes from people at the time saying it's an unwinnable battle, yada, yada, yada. So I guess it stands to reason that if you project that out 7 years, you might think that's what the future's going to look like. I guess.
For sure. I didn't look at the numbers, but I shared the same thought, Tristan, as I watched.
Yeah. It was well, you got me onto that because you had some numbers on that when we did the Turtles one. I can't remember what they were.
it was high.
Yeah.
Stakes is
high. It's interesting because also the articles I found when I was looking this up were actually written recently because there's been a lot of fear-mongering in New York of late. That it's so dangerous now and, you know, it's post-COVID and it's...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's a scary time in New York. And actually, if you look at the data, no, it's not at all. It's still... All these crime rates are still... They're slightly higher than they were pre-COVID, but they're still the lowest they've been in decades kind of thing.
Yeah.
Overall.
Have you seen that book, Factfulness?
No.
There's a TED Talk guy. He's a Swedish... He's a statistician, I guess. I don't know. And he basically plotted all this data because basically to debunk popular misconceptions.
Right.
And a heap of them really are a positive spin on, well, people say the world's in bad shape, but actually the trends of, you know, life expectancy, poverty,
right,
all the sort of major ones, the state of the world is you know, exponentially better than it was 20 years ago, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's interesting because also this one, I mean, I guess it all makes sense why. We don't need to get into too much critical theory around media and shit. But, yeah, this article had something about because of recent mayoral elections and fear-mongering use and that. It showed some kind of trend line that it was as soon as one of the candidates had this campaign around, like, it's a scary time in New York, you know, time to change mayors kind of thing, the fears of the civilians had gone up like,
yeah,
crazy.
I better vote for you.
Be responsible, man.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all those things are related, and more fear equals probably more reactiveness to shit that doesn't even need to be reacted to, and, you know,
cops being
racist and shit, you know, like.
Send down a few predators, though. Clear up the streets.
Good time for a predator to show up.
Where do we land with Predator? What's your take out of old Preddy after this one? Do you think he's not such a bad guy, or do you think he's a bad guy? Where are you at with Preddies in this film?
That's interesting. I think I like that he has a code, which I think we get to see a bit more of in this.
I thought you were going to say something like, I like that he had that throwy thing.
I like his net. His net's pretty badass. I like that he has a code. Like, did he not kill that woman because she was pregnant or something?
I believe so.
Yeah. Also, caveat, we watched this like 2 weeks ago now, so I'm forgetting some details. I had that in my notes and I couldn't quite remember what that
was. Yeah, the main girl, she was preggers.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So that's quite cool. And they doubled down on that, I think, in Prey as well. So I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I guess I would put it, to you, Greg, would.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Is a human hunting any trophy animal also a bit of a jerk?
Wow.
Mm.
Yeah. Is he eating these people?
I don't think he is. He's just de-spining them and put them in his trophy cabinet, straight to the pool room.
Yes, that's a very good point. It's not for sustenance.
Yeah, exactly. And so I like the ending of this is great. I think this is the perfect balance, again, sequel-wise, to expand the lore in a way that, you know, it adds some context even to the first movie. Like, you rewatch the first one. I think we knew even in the first one, right, because he doesn't kill the woman. But it expands it a bit further. Yeah. And I dig that. And the ending is pretty fucking cool. You see a few different predators. You see a xenomorph skull.
The gun.
And the gun.
Says, we've been here for a long time, champ.
And the gun was in Prey, right?
Oh.
I didn't pick up on it either. I only heard about it after. But that.
Oh, that's good.
So I was listening to a podcast interview with the director of Prey.
Oh, nice.
Which is really awesome. They talked about all kinds of stuff. But that was, as he was formulating the idea for the film, he had this idea of like, a period piece kind of thing. How far back should I go? And then he remembered the gun from Predator 2 and he was like, I'll set it that year. And the gun is in it. It's the gun she gets. But it doesn't quite make sense. Well, I guess somehow the Predators end up getting that gun, but she had it at the end of the movie, so I don't know how they end up getting it. But it was from one of the French guys or whatever they were.
Yeah, the trappers. Context for people – because I realize we're just talking about it. At the end of Predy 2, Danny defeats a predator and then the other predators come and get the dead predator and then
they have a dance.
They're just like, it's like, respect, Danny. Here's and he gives him this pistol and it's like it's an antique pistol from yesteryear.
Yeah.
And then they weave it into the story of Prey.
That's nice.
That's awesome. That's good. We like
it. It's a good little – it's a nice thing because it does add meaning if you notice it, and if you don't notice it, it doesn't really matter.
Hmm.
It's just like it's good.
It's a little – is that an Easter egg? Is that what they call it?
That's an Easter egg. It is an Easter egg. Yeah. Yeah. But also, yeah, good podcast episode of the film podcast. Go listen to it. They talk to the director for like an hour about this shit. It's really cool.
Nice. That's all I got, bro.
Me too. Oh, one quick shout out to Liquid Nitrogen making an appearance once again in a 90s action movie.
Oh, yeah. Rude not to.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get into the verdict, shall we?
Let's do it.
I don't know what to say, really.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
I am the law.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I want to have them answered immediately.
You can't handle the truth.
What are you waiting for?
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Nothing further,
Your Honor.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Friends, we realized, we're editing the podcast the other week, and we realized actually it would make more sense to deliver our final thought after our little verdict tests. And we should reorder those tests because some of them are more meaningful than others. Some are just funny. So why don't we start with effects test, Greg? Where do we think this one sits? I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything terrible. Can you? I can't. It's been a while now.
I didn't love Predator, the suit. I liked the Predator in the first one better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think even in Prey I had a similar thought. Like it looked like a man in a suit a lot.
Yeah.
It doesn't ruin it for me, but it does feel a little – it feels a little too human or something. Yeah.
It's a bit too nipple on the old Batman for me.
Interesting. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. I still give it a pass, but that is a good point. Good point. This is a new one because I felt like we didn't have enough to just talk more broadly about, you know, components that hold up or not. So does anything in this fundamentally break when you look at it through the lens of current day? I think to your point it was maybe teetering on some racial things, but I guess it wasn't. We've definitely seen a lot worse.
It wasn't overt.
Yeah, it wasn't overt. And actually, speaking of, I've under the bucket of representation, thought we could do Bechdel test, which we've always done. But I was looking it up. I Googled, is there a race equivalent of Bechdel test? And people just do the Bechdel test but replace female with person of color, and the test is still valid.
Oh, yeah.
So Bechdel test, no, it doesn't pass. But the race version of the Bechdel test, it certainly does. So yeah. People of color, pretty much everyone except Bill Paxton in this is not white, and they talk about things to each other that aren't about white men. So there you go.
They're about predators.
That's a pass. So that's a good pass. That's a good pass. Cultural relevance. Did Simpsons do it? Technically not this specific film, but they have done Predator.
Yeah.
Same goes for porn parody. I don't know if there's a specific Predator 2 porn parody. But I guess in broader terms of cultural relevance, you've got to give it some big points for its direct connection to Prey. I feel like that's kind of pulled it out of the mud and into the limelight a little bit. Mm. So, yeah, I guess that's our first attempt at a new way of doing our little evaluation criteria.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all in all for me, man, I love this movie. I love it. And I think in my mind – Predator 1, Predator 2, and Prey are a pretty great trilogy to look at. They hang together quite nice.
Mm.
Not bad at all. What do you think, Gregory?
Yep, I was pleasantly surprised by this film. It had a lot more going on than I had expected. It was a vibe, which is an expression I don't like to use too much, but it was. It was a
yeah.
Did you do any recasties or anything?
No, I was thinking on that, but I think it's just like I think to recast, you'd have to do a repitch. Like if you did the Samurai one, who would it be? Or if you did the 60s war one, what would it be? Maybe. Because this is a pretty perfect cast. It's kind of the time. There's even a bald one in there, apparently, someone said in a Facebook.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, actually, before I forget, I should have said this earlier. I'm actually guesting on another pod in a couple of weeks.
Nice.
The Action podcast. They do action movies and rank them. They've got a mega ranking going. And I'm going to be covering Predators. So very much on theme. I don't know the exact release date, but I think it's a week or two from now. So there you go. All right, so make sure you go listen to that for the full story. Yeah,
let's give it a plug at the top of the next app.
Absolutely, we will, yeah. MVP?
Danny for me.
Danny boy, absolutely.
He was great in this movie.
Concur. Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
I like that man. I like Danny Glover. Always did.
He's great. He's always kind of whispering.
He came to Australia. I remember I saw him on, you know, might have been Hey Hey or something, a couple of interviews, and he just seems like the nicest guy.
Yeah.
Just like happy.
Yeah.
So I didn't really talk about this in the app. I just always was a massive Danny Glover fan as a kid. I mean, I love Lethal Weapon so much. So that's probably a big part of it. But
yeah,
he's just he just seems like a nice dude. And now he's in like Wes Anderson stuff. And
yeah.
Because I don't know, man. And he's
obviously older, but like when was Lethal Weapon 1? Like 88 or 86 or something? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe 86.
And he's saying then he's too old for this shit.
Yeah, how old was he?
He must have been like 28 or something. How does that fucking work?
It's fucked up.
Yeah.
He's probably definitely younger than we are now. And he had like.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Grown children.
All right. Well, with that, friends, we'll see you next week.
It's the end of Sequel September. Any final musings on Sequel September?
Well, I think. I think if I. Well, of the three we've done, This has to be. I wouldn't say this is the best sequel. It's definitely not the worst one of the three, but it is definitely the surprise hit of the three films we've done. Yeah.
What did we do? Back to the Future 2, this, and what was the other one?
Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Oh yeah,
which was fine. It was just fine.
Yeah, that was. I reckon Beverly Hills Cop 2 wasn't as good as I remember.
Yeah.
This was. Like a lot better than I remember, and Back to the Future 2 was kind of where I remember it.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah, exactly. That's kind of it. And I think what started to unfold as we've gone through these is getting a bit more solid on what might make a good sequel, which has been interesting to do.
You know,
not just copy and paste, not going too crazy with over-explaining things. But, yeah, and expand the lore, up the stakes, you know, that's kind of fun.
And I think that's kind of the trend at large because there's a lot of instances where sequels or, you know, follow films that are coming out now have cut out the shit and are just doing their sequel based on, oh, I'm just going to do the sequel from the first one.
Yeah.
Or the second one or whatever they – like the Halloween one.
Oh, sorry. I see what you're saying. Yeah. True. Yeah.
So they Friday the 13th did it as well, didn't they? And they make it. Who else has done it?
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Blair Witch did it.
Blair Witch did it.
There you go. Well, we'll chat on that in moments.
Apparently, we're covering that soon.
Yeah. Tap your ruby slippers together, guys. It could happen. All right. We'll see you next week, guys. Leave a review.
Take care of yourselves and each other.
Yeah, bye.
And each other.
Talking publicly about it for the first time, Van Winkle describes a terrifying night in his suite at a Beverly Hills hotel. When he says Suge Knight showed up with six other men.
Roughed one of my bodyguards up. They roughed everybody else in my whole entourage up. Suge took me out on the balcony, started talking to me personally.
On the balcony?
On the balcony.
High above?
Like 15 floors. He had me look over the edge, show me how high I was up there.
You scared?
I needed to wear a diaper on that day. I was very scared.